moment about what happened in Bolivia, where thousands filled the streets of the capital, La Paz, to confront military forces who tried to carry out a coup against the democratically elected president, Luis Arce. Hours after the coup failed, Bolivian authorities arrested the rogue military commander, General Juan José Zuniga, and his alleged co-conspirator, Navy Chief Juan Arnez. The President Arce has sworn in new heads of the Army, Navy, and Air Force. We will speak online with our guest, who's in Cochabamba, Bolivia, Catherine Lederer, who is director of the Andean Information Network. You can go to democracynow.org for that report. But we have to end now. We wish a very happy birthday to John Randolph and let you know about a job opening at Democracy Now! We are currently accepting applications for a director of development. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Shrifuga Kudus, Messiah Rhodes, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, and Hannah Elias. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Anna Osbeck, Emily Anderson, and Buffy St. Marie Hernandez. Tune into our specials next week on July 4th and 5th, and you can watch any broadcast and any podcast wherever you get your podcast. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, this is Mark Sanford Gross, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to KBOO, KBOO, 90.7 FM, Portland.
Here we go again, it's the game we love.
Tune in on the first and third Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. for Winner's Bias, a new show exploring the culture around tabletop gaming. From game nights to conventions, Nate and James share what makes the hobby so vibrant through banter and interviews with local members of the hobby game scene. And if we can inspire a few listeners to join us around the table, all the better. More people to play with. Winner's Bias. You don't have to win to have fun, but it doesn't hurt. The first and third Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Support for this program comes from KBOO members in Portland Public Schools preschool programs, offering education and support for families of preschoolers. Enrolling now for children who will be 3 to 4 by September 1st. Information at pps.net/earlylearning.
KBOO.
This is Keeping It Real, and I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today is Willie Levinson of the Human Access Project. They've got fun new shenanigans in the Willamette River coming up this summer, including a mini big float. Can it be mini if it's big? Can it be big if it's mini? I'm just asking. And a Cathedral Park River Fest celebrating the Willamette's newest swimming spot. You, Willie Levinson, I'm pointing at you. You've done the things. Welcome to the airwaves, Willie.
Thank you, Lisa. It's always awesome to visit with you. And I have to say that I love, the oxymorons of mini big float. I'll even go as far to say that the party this weekend is shaping up to be a mild rager.
A mild rager.
Yeah. So it's a mini big float that is shaping up to be a mild rager.
If you just tuned in and you've never heard of the Human Access Project, Willie, I don't even know how many years it was the first time you ever sat in a KBOO studio in front of me and said, "We're all going to jump in the Willamette." I thought you were crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. And I picked at you. I bickered at you. How many years ago was that?
You know, it could have been 12 years ago. I mean,
no,
this is the 14th year.
It was definitely more than that. I feel like it was more than that.
We've been doing this 14 years now. It was really close to the beginning. It could have been 14 years ago. Yeah. I mean, you were one of the first people that just allowed me the time of day to, you know, share my dreams. And I've appreciated our dialogue over the years and your support. And I mean, more than anybody, you've kind of seen the hard work that we've done and the results we've brought. But ultimately, you know, the mission of Human Access Project is transforming Portland's relationship with the Willamette River. The work of our organization is cultural change. And year to year, it's just super cool. I mean, there's still a lot of people that are resistant to rethink, you know, what they've been told about the Willamette. And I'm not apologizing for, there is pollution in the Willamette. There is a lot of work that needs to be done. But, you know, from a human health perspective, it is safe to swim in the river. And that's an incredible place to start. And, you know, from our perspective, there's a clear connection between recreation and stewardship. We're very driven by the simple words of Jacques Cousteau, people protect what they love. And if people do view the Willamette as an asset, with something as something that they can personally benefit from in terms of swimming and recreation, they're more likely to care about it. They're more likely to fight for it. And that's, you know, what we've slowly but surely seen over 14 years. It's just incredibly satisfying and just really feels like an honor to be able to be a part of it.
In a minute, I want to ask you, I want to go back to when you first had this idea, but I do also want to take a moment right now and say Saturday, June 29th, a grand opening party for Portland's newest swimming dock at Cathedral Park. They're calling it Cathedral Park Riverfest. People moved 150 tons of concrete and rubble. Almost just cursed. Almost just had to go look for the dump button. You guys moved so much rubble, concrete, rocks gathered from that beach in the middle of the pandemic too. There's going to be live music, a free life jacket giveaway, free kayak rentals because that's where the mosquito fleet.
That's right. Our buddies
also,
the mosquito fleet.
Yeah, yes. The mosquito fleet are people who get in kayaks and help make political statements in the middle of the Willamette River about oil tankers and things of that nature.
They're not afraid to interrupt stuff. It's awesome.
And that is what they do. And plus a free family swim safety clinic. And
Black Swimming Initiative, another awesome nonprofit.
Oh, tell us about that.
Black Swimming Initiative, well, you know, the highest rate of drowning is among children and then people of color, it's even higher. So they really focus on the BIPOC community, providing swim lessons to communities of color. But this, I mean, white folks, non-BIPOC folks, please feel welcome. I mean, they're called the Black Swimming Initiative, particularly for this Cathedral Park Riverfest from 2 to 3:30. It's going to be a free family swim clinic to teach basic river swimming skills and water safety skills. Because what's really interesting is that it's you know, number one, I mean, it's as Portland more and more embraces the river culture, and we understand that our second largest public space and natural area owned by the citizens of Oregon, of which we only have 5% access to in the central city.
That just blows my mind when you look at it like that. When you start thinking it's a space. We should all be living in the space.
It is our liquid public space. Yeah. And it really brings out the best in people. It's, you know, it's a connector. Cell phones don't work as well by the water. People are a little more cautious to use them. And it's just, you know, it's really egalitarian. When you jump in the water, everybody's generally dressed the same way, you know, and it's the magic of water. You know, gravity is kind of on your side in water. If you were to climb up a ladder and fall off terrestrially, it would really hurt. There would be consequences. If you were to climb up a ladder and fall in water, it's just a big splash.
Fall off terrestrially. You know, I love thinking about that.
Yeah.
Water
is magic.
If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving, and our guest today is one of my favorite people, Willie Levinson, Human Access Project. There's so much to talk about. There's so much to unpack with human access at the Willamette River. And Willie's over here. He's fighting with his office chair. This is real radio. We're real people who live here in the Portland metro area. I wanted to ask you, what's the first time you ever went in the Willamette River, like jumped in?
First time I got in the Willamette River, there was a super cool event called the Portland Challenge. That was, it's funny because I was just talking to somebody about this morning. If you could Google it, Lisa, while we're talking about it, because I would really like to give a shout out to the organizer of that event. He used to put together, you know, this event called the Portland Challenge, and it was a fundraiser for an orphanage in Tunisia that ultimately wound up being built. And he just had this super cool concept to get together at the Slammer Tavern, you know, consume a little bit of alcohol, which isn't necessarily, you know, the best idea when it comes to swimming, but that's how it happened. without parade permits, we would march from the Slammer Tavern in Southeast to the Willamette, swim across the river with watermelons, just because it was a whimsical, fun thing.
And they float. Maybe use one as a flotation device, although I would question that, but go ahead.
It was just super fun. And because when I first moved to Portland and I was indoctrinated with our culture that said, you know, rains a lot here and never put your toe in the Willamette because your skin will flake off, you'll grow a third eye and everything else. It was really disappointing because, I mean, I went to college in a town that had the new river flowing behind it in Virginia, Radford University. Then I moved to Boise, Idaho, which suddenly is becoming the darling place in the country to live. But, you know, Boise has the Paris of urban river park systems in the world. I mean, I didn't realize that when I was living there, but, you know, 90% of my activism inspiration comes from my experience living in Boise, Idaho, you know, when I was 23 to 26. So when I found out about this event, I was just really connected with it. And so we'd start Slammer Tavern, no parade permits. We would literally march across MLK and stop traffic.
Yeah, if you can visualize the Slammer Tavern, that's right here by KBOO, actually. That place is classic. When I think of the Slammer.
Slammer is correct.
Yeah.
Trey Shannon, you know, Voodoo Donuts fame. He would, you know, at least a couple times he had a band called The Missing Yous that would play Rolling Stones covers on the roof of the Slammer. It was just hilarious, just awesome fun. So, you know, for me, the epiphany moment came. I'm just feeling totally empowered by being in this group of like 100 people going down to the river. We're stopping traffic, we're wearing swimsuits, and suddenly I was just made eye contact with somebody in a car, and I could read it in their eyes. They were like, "You guys are going to swim in the Willamette. You are crazy." And I was just thinking, you know what? This is awesome. Because, you know, it's like when you're a part of a group, just like a protest or anything else, you're empowered by the people around you. So suddenly, even though the social culture said it was crazy, you know, it felt empowering to be in the group. So the Portland Challenge stopped after, you know, 5 or 6 years, and I really felt this void. And I thought, you know what? This has to continue because, I mean, all the science at that point was out there. The Big Pipe had been completed, which is the largest civic works program in Portland's history. It cost $1.44 billion to basically control our sewage overflow problem. You know, it used to be that would have 50 to 100 sewage overflows a year. It would only take a tenth of an inch of rain to trigger it. When it happened, it would be measured in days and weeks at a time. So, you know, now it still happens. There hasn't been one in the summertime since the Big Pipe's completion, but now it's like 4 to 5. And when it happens, it's measured in minutes and hours, and it's 80% stormwater, 20% sewage. I mean, no apologies for it, but it's a dramatic improvement. So, you know, when the Portland Challenge was happening, at that point, the water quality was fine for swimming, but, you know, the data isn't enough. You know, being able to actually see human beings going into the water, that is really, you know, what I adopted as the formula for cultural change. So from there, I thought, you know, I just, this energy has to continue. But I was thinking, you know, the Portland Challenge, I love the punk rock nature of it. But if we want to expand the net, I want to make it more legitimate. So I wanted to bring in sponsors. I wanted to, you know, everyone doesn't feel comfortable swimming across the river. And it turns out because the Willamette's a navigable channel, the Coast Guard really doesn't like when people swim across the river anyways. The first couple big floats, we did actually float across the river. And then I had this conversation with the Coast Guard. That was actually Multnomah County, maybe. And they were like, we're having a post conversation about the big float. And they said, so, you know, how did everything go? This is good. He says, but, you know, we have a problem with you going across the channel. And I said, well, maybe we can just do it one last year. And they said, well, you said that last year, Willie. I says, oh.
They know you now.
I says, oh, I forgot about that.
Right.
Okay, well.
You know, I have to say the first time I ever jumped in the Willamette River, it was because I was floating in a circular ring all the way across it. And it was incredible. I did go across.
Okay, that was
the
one
first
or two.
Time, yeah, the first time I ever went into the Willamette River, it was because it was the big float and Human Access was going to make a world record.
For inner tubes. Longest float people in a floating line.
Which you did. And we got to help you like figure out the paperwork, the which was wild.
Yeah.
And my favorite thing though about that one day was that there were these two dudes in suits, and they looked like the Blues Brothers, except they were half their age, and they were just accountants. They didn't know what they were going to do at work today, but they went
were
to work.
And adjudicators,
yeah. And right, so they had to be looking at all the things.
That was hilarious.
They looked so cool, and they looked proud to be there.
It was the coolest job they'd ever have. It because generally what they do is they observe legal things. We had to hire like a legal service to have professional observers for the Guinness Book of World Records. And we did, yes, we did wind up breaking a record for most people in a floating line that wound up getting broken a year later by the Harley-Davidson Motorcycle Group of Taiwan. And they did it on a lake, which sort of, it feels like there should be a separate river category. But if you do Google Guinness Book of World Records Human Access Project, it still lives on their website. That was a very fun. I like to think of a lot of our work as constructive mischief.
I have to also say, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today is Willie Levinson of the Human Access Project. They've got shenanigans planned on the Willamette River this summer, including a mini big float. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. The Cathedral Park River Fest. And this Saturday, the biggest thing, I just want you to remember, this Saturday, June 29th, the grand opening party for Portland's newest swimming dock at Cathedral Park. It's the Cathedral Park River Fest, and we're going to talk about that also. I want to back up a little bit and say, now, I have a lot of friends that are environmentalists. I really don't see myself as being an environmentalist, but I've lived vicariously through them. Like people who protested against chimpanzee testing and people who are all about the river. And it's weird about the river, the Willamette, because for some reason, people love to be snobs about how dirty it is. And you've just talked about this for 10 minutes. Like, you know, you can have all of the tests. You can spend $1 billion building the big pipe. This is the point of why we did it. This is the point of why we did it. But I wanted to ask you, timeline for me. Like, you invited people to jump in the river. Now, a whole lot of things have happened in that year. In the year since then, there's a whole bunch of swimming holes now on the Willamette. And just like with the other project, these were do-it-yourself revolutions. Talk about what has changed for the Willamette since we all started jumping in.
Okay, I will. But before I do, I actually have a question for you. So when you did the big float for the first time and you had all of your, feelings about what the Willamette River was, et cetera, how did it feel for you to go into the Willamette the first time?
It was really cold. It was really cold. And it was weird, too, because you can't see. My thing is, I'm kind of afraid of the water. I'm afraid of wild water. And if I can't see the bottom,
it is,
I'm kind of afraid, right? But that's a natural thing. It's natural to be unsure about where you're going if you're going to submerge yourself in something. But what I loved about being there was, here's literally a thousand people, all of us doing something that someone had told us not to do for years.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even our bosses. Things that our friends and family told us not to do, and our bosses. And I just loved that. I loved it. I loved it.
So that's what I loved about the Portland Challenge too, when I got first introduced to it, is it felt really subversive. And I think the beginning of Human Access Project, it felt subversive. And then at a certain point, you turn a corner and it feels less of I still think it feels subversive. And what's cool about it is, I tell people, you can make a difference literally by just taking a friend to the river and swimming, because our river culture is still emerging so much that you're making a statement just by getting in the river. And that kind of feels subversive. And I think it's kind of fun to feel subversive. It certainly keeps my 13-year-old self alive. But in terms of, you know, what we've done, where we started, it was really kind of the first big thing we did was we were able to get a group of people from different departments in the city to make a case for putting up swim at your own risk signs on the Willamette. And I had a group of about 11 different people from different departments for an hour and a half telling me it'd be absolutely impossible to put swim at your own risk signs up. And all these fanciful reasons why it couldn't be done. So I just left the meeting and just said, you know, I think you should consult the city attorney because I think you're at way more risk by doing nothing than informing people about the basic risks of swimming. So a couple months later, I followed up and got a call. I said, well, believe it or not, the city attorney agrees with you. We'll put signs up if you guys pay for them. So we negotiated a sign. I thought it was hilarious because it's such a sexy thing to pay for. I loved kind of being able to say we paid for these signs. It's just a tangible thing.
What do the signs say? Tell us what they say. They say...
Swim at your own risk. They were solid signs. They were good. I mean, I think it's always really, I don't mind scaring people about the risks of getting into the into water in general, because the bad things happen when you underestimate water. You know, the strongest swimmers can drown. I mean, you know, just like riding a bike. I mean, if you don't pay attention when you're riding a bike, a car can kill you. If you let down your guard while you're swimming, it can kill you too. So it's a really serious thing. So there's a lot of really good warnings on the sign. Has a swimming icon. One of the things we negotiated is they used red lettering, and I was like, you know, maybe we could tone it down a little bit. So, but totally good sign. Totally good sign. From there, we started removing concrete at what we nicknamed Audrey McCall Beach. Tad McCall, who's Tom McCall's son, is on our board of trustees. And we ran it by him. He says, yep, the family is in support of it. It's
of course they would be. Where is that one again? Audrey McCall Beach is
Audrey McCall Beach is on the east side of the river, adjacent to the Hawthorne Bridge, between the Hawthorne Bridge and OMSI. It's the one green space in the Central East Side Industrial District. Aaron Graham from OMSI, who's the president of OMSI, is also on our board of trustees. Jeremy Fivecrows from CRICFIC. Nez Pierce is the co-chair of Center for Tribal Nations, which is going on in OMSI, also on our board. So we have a lot of synergy happening on the east side. We love Carolyn Holcomb, who's the executive director of Central East Side Industrial Council. And we're going to start, you know, doing some work now finally on moving Audrey McCall Beach forward. But we wound up removing 200 tons of concrete from that site over 4 years manually with the Inverness Inmate Work Crew and my friends. We had to get permission from 8 separate agencies to remove the concrete chunks from that site. Then from there, we spearheaded the opening of Poets Beach. That was Portland's first recognized public beach in 100 years. You know, in the 1900s, Portland had a robust swimming culture. We found an article about Bundy Baths, which is around where Portland Spirit is. They had an article saying that they rented 1,200 swimsuits a day in the summertime.
What? I never heard of that.
Bundy Baths. If you go to Alameda History or do a search for Bundy Baths, unbelievable history. Then this is Doug Decker's work. I don't know if you know Doug Decker.
Doug Decker is actually, someone should do something. He's like the poet. He's like the historian laureate of our area. That's the guy who even figured out who the actual casualties were of the Vanport flood.
Really?
Which had been buried in history, Doug Decker.
Doug has an unbelievable mind. His ability to retain things and then his storytelling ability is unbelievable. I've got a crush on Doug Decker myself. So he also found an article on Windermuth. So there used to be at Ross Island a floating platform. So just imagine like a pool deck floating on the river with the inside cut out. So you'd be able to lounge around the outside, swim. There was an ad he found that says that you could take a ferry, like a boat shuttle, from the foot of Stark Street, which left every 30 minutes from noon every day to take you to Windermuth. There was literally an active shuttle that went every 30 minutes to take people to Windermuth. Then there was also a dance hall on the island, so people would go to Windermuth to swim and dance.
Where's that?
It was at Ross Island.
Oh, and we had to turn that into a gravel pit? Are you kidding me right now?
What happened was...
I'm shouting.
What happened was, in 1924, as Portland grew, we never had a sewer intercept system. So all of the raw sewage from our city literally flowed into the river. Our main trunk sewer was the Willamette River. It was literally an open sewer. And in time, as Portland got bigger, it got worse and worse. In 1924, this is the 100-year anniversary this year, Portland City Council shut the Willamette for swimming. And I just imagine living in that time when there was a robust swimming culture. There was a natatorium at Oaks Park that was a swimming facility. There was a public bath under the original Morrison Bridge. Suddenly, this thing was taken from people. And at a certain point, visiting with Duck Decker, he was reading letters to the editor about, you know, the city basically choosing pollution over people at that point. And people were just saying, you have to remove the Windermuth shell, because it was just so hard for people to see this skeleton of a place they used to have so much joy from sitting in the river, unusable because of sewage pollution. So in 1938, Mayor Carson at the time put a ballot measure forth to pay for a sewer intercept system. It wound up, the shovels didn't go into the ground for 9 years later, but that did get sewage out of the Willamette. We still had a sewage overflow problem, and then that was addressed in 2011. So, yeah, just very interesting history. And so, you know, celebrating the 100-year anniversary of city council saying you can't swim in the Willamette by having a new $900,000 dock and 150 tons of concrete removed from Cathedral Park, which is disproportionately impacted by industry. It's part of the Portland Harbor. I mean, this is a community that's felt hostage to the Superfund site for probably the last 50 years. So for me, it really felt punk rock to get people together and say, you know what? F it, you know, we're gonna fix this on our own. Because, you know, what's funny is the millions and millions and millions of dollars that have been spent on that Superfund site, we removed 150 tons of concrete for about $15,000. And it was not easy to get funding for that. Metro paid for a good chunk of it, which is really cool, but that was really the only entity that contributed to it. And then we had to take money out of our own funds to pay for the rest.
Why, Willie, though? Why? Like, I know this is an obvious question, but is it, because this has got to be the history of the lackadaisical aspects of policy impacting pollution in this entire country.
You know what? I'm happy we got it done. I don't care.
Okay.
Yeah. I really don't care. But it's cool. And it's what's amazing is, you know, so the proposition is come out to move concrete chunks off a beach. And, you know, for people who have been involved in our projects before, it feels like a pretty hard ask. I mean, who wants to pick up concrete chunks?
But yeah, it seems like pretty hot days, honestly.
But what winds up happening is what I love about our cleanup events is that people show up, you know, first time 100 people in 2021, then in 2023, 150 people show up. Nobody knows anybody else who's there. The community's coming together. You give people very basic instructions about what the objective is, something you can get your arms around, and then suddenly humans cooperate with each other, you know. They figure out creative ways to get the concrete off the beach. And then suddenly they realize, wait a second, if I was to do this on my own, nothing would get done. Today, I have the power of 150 people. It is literally the power of collectivism just happening, you know? So like when people say, well, I'm not going to vote, my vote doesn't matter, you know, being able to be involved in collective action like that helps you realize that, yeah, I mean, if it was just you picking up concrete, it wouldn't matter. It would matter. But when you have 150 people, you suddenly have 150 person horsepower behind you doing it. And then as you're doing it, you're like, wow, we're making progress. And I mean, at the end, people work on that stuff until they can't pick up concrete anymore. It is actually super fun and empowering.
And I'm going to say this again. I have grown old in this town as a reporter covering political movements, policy movements. And what strikes me about Willie Levinson, the Human Access Project, is that you find a way to weave people together that didn't know each other before. And whether that's just in everyday people who are on a beach or fancy pants members of the policy bureaucracy who are just convinced that there's no human way to put a sign up that warns people about not, you know, it cracks me up because you were right from the very beginning when you said, no, these environmental movements are about this river. If we don't bring people into the river, there won't be a movement.
Well, it's about expanding the tent. It's not about preaching to the people who are already showing up to church. It's like, how can we make the tent bigger? How can we find the person that's not engaged right now and find them a way to get engaged and just understand that, you know, if you're able to put out a low threshold to start that, I mean, in terms of bringing people together, I mean, it's just the power of water. I mean, I've just kind of had faith in the power of water from the beginning, that if we can set up platforms for people to experience the Willamette in a positive way, it will take care of itself. So in terms of our work over 14 years, what I see now is that we've been hitting singles and doubles and triples sometimes every year for the last 14 years.
What do you mean?
So it's baseball analogy. So, you know, when you're playing baseball, I never played baseball, but, you know, so... So you get up to bat, you get somebody on first, right? You know, and then you hit an out, and then somebody else gets on base, and now you have two people on base, and then you have three people on base, and then suddenly every time you get a hit, somebody moves in and you get a run. You with me on that baseball?
Yeah,
analogy?
you're just moving forward.
After 14 years, all these little things that seem kind of like small little things suddenly is a portfolio. You know, at this point, we've touched virtually every low-hanging fruit beach. We spearheaded the opening of Poets Beach. We spearheaded the opening of Audra McCall Beach, Portland's second official public beach. It took us 6 years to get permission to add 8 swim ladders that took less.
And you paid for them, didn't you?
Permission is more important than money.
Yeah.
That's always been my philosophy.
Yeah.
I mean, rather than asking, to me, it's like when it comes to advocating on property that you don't own, just imagine, where you live, if you wanted to put a palm tree on your neighbor's yard across the street for whatever reason. Now, you don't own that property. You're going to need the permission of the person who owns the property. So how would you go about trying to get permission from your neighbor to put up a palm tree? It would start by offering to pay for it. That would be a good entree. And then from there, you might say, well, I'd like to do a palm tree. What kind of palm trees do you like? I really don't care. I just want a palm tree. Just trying to have as much investment in the property owner as possible. So that's kind of been my philosophy, is that if I can get permission, I'll figure out a way to pay for it. So, you know, Duckworth Dock, now it used to be a motorized dock. Now it's a swimming dock. In my opinion, it's the most fun place. It's the most fun dock experience in Portland. Selwood is really nice. Cathedral Park is going to turn into a river playground in very short order. But, you know, Selwood, we added 6 swim ladders last summer in partnership with Parks and Rec. There's going to be 7 swim ladders at the Cathedral Park dock. We've added swim ladders to the Firehouse dock.
Wait. Let's make a list. I wanted to do this earlier. Can we make a list of all the beach access places? And if you're listening, get a pencil. Get a crayon right now.
It's on our website, too. If you search for Willamette River Swimming, it'll pop up. And there's... but let's go south to north. Selwood Riverfront Park. But I'd even go beyond that. I would say everybody in Portland, take a road trip to Lake Oswego.
Okay.
Heaven forbid, take a trip. You know, Lake Oswego is very pleasant as a day trip. You know, everything's really pulled together. It doesn't have the edge of Portland for sure. They have a wonderful park called George Rogers Park that in the summertime on the Willamette is crawling with people. And I love taking people on river tours to George Rogers Park and watching people swim there and just reminding people there is no material difference in the water quality at George Rogers Park in downtown Portland or Cathedral Park. There is no material difference. Why are people swimming at George Rogers Park? Why are people swimming at Sauvies Island, which again is downstream from the Superfund site? If people, you know, for people who are, you know, get all up in hackles for that, which, you know, I don't dismiss the Superfund and the pollution at the Superfund site, but there's no material difference in water quality. So why are people going to George Rogers Park and they're not going to downtown Portland? It's because at George Rogers Park, they have created a place for people that is compatible with habitat. If we're able to create these places in Portland, we will eliminate car traffic out of the city. And I keep going back. I love partnering with Bike Loud. They're like my, you know, sister activist organization. But my highest metric personally for quality of life in a city is being able to get on your bike, ride to the river, and swim. So let's start with George Rogers Park. That's about as far south.
I actually wanted to take a moment to say this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today, Willie Levinson of the Human Access Project. They've got Willamette River festivals, parties, mini big float, Cathedral Park River Festival, and that's this Saturday, June 29th. They're having their grand opening party for Portland's newest swimming dock. It's at Cathedral Park. It's going to be the Cathedral Park River Festival. Honestly, if I know these people, and I do, they're probably going to keep doing this. That's the kind of thing they do. They actually party among the things they're trying to conserve. They're celebrating the 150 tons of concrete and rubble, 250 volunteers, removed all that stuff from Cathedral Park Beach. And there's just so much going on. Not only has Human Access created this beach scene, I want you to talk about the dock scene, the party docks. Like, I'm calling it party docks, but really you've got live music out there.
Okay.
You've got sunshine, people, water. Talk about the dock scenes.
Okay. So, really quick, going back, let's talk about Willamette River swimming spots, and then I'll talk about Duckworth Summer Wednesday, which is a weekly DJ'd supported concert series we have at the Duckworth Dock every Wednesday starting July 3rd, which will be kicked off with the four quadrant candidate splash ride, where we're having 32 candidates from four different quadrants bike to the Duckworth Dock to swim. But going south to north, first we have George Rogers Park, which I mentioned, which is a must do for people who love Willamette River recreation as something that we are going to be aspiring to in Portland. Then we have Selwood Riverfront Park, which has a brand new swim dock that was added a few years ago. Human Access Project added six swim ladders last summer in partnerships with Parks and Rec. Beautiful sandy beach, great views of downtown, excellent, well-used park, robust swimming culture there already. Then we have Poets Beach, which is Portland's first recognized beach in 100 years, official public beach. It used to be on the Portland Parks and Rec website. If you wanted to know where to swim on the Willamette, the closest thing you'd find in like a Find a Park matrix was a box that said River Views. So now there is a box that is River Swimming. These are the cultural changes that happen. It's cultural change among individual people. It's cultural change among the institutions that manage it. And Poets Beach is really fun because we have poetry from kids inscribed on the rocks on the trail. And we also got 11 Chinook jargon words from the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, where we have the Chinook Wawa spelling, English phonetic and English translation, so you can learn 11 Chinook jargon words as well. Then Ajumacall Beach on the east side of the river, Poets is on the west. That is right under the Hawthorne Bridge. And Parks and Rec is in the process of taking over an easement that is currently owned by ODOT. Once they take that over, we'll be able to work with parks to improve access down there, possibly do fundraising and grant writing to add sand to the beach there, which is exciting. Tomacall Bowl on the other side of the river. There's going to be some really interesting announcements that I can't quite talk about yet, but let's just say there's a lot of momentum happening at Tomacall Bowl at the moment that is very exciting. Recently, this past year, we partnered with Parks and Rec to finally improve that ankle-breaking trail that's at the top of the bowl. That is a nice gravel trail. Last September, we got 100 volunteers out to remove 25 tons of riprap off the water's edge of the beach and created really nice trails down there. Then you have the Firehouse Dock back on the east side, which is where the River Hugger Swim Team swims. This is the 12th season of the River Hugger Swim Team. That is a program of Human Access Project. We are a recreational protest swim, bringing attention to the extreme deficit of water edge access in Portland. We do open water swimming 6 days a week. We swim across the Willamette and back Monday through Friday, and then we swim from the Hawthorne Bridge to from the Firehouse Dock to the Morrison Bridge and back on Saturdays, and sometimes we swim to the OMSI Sub as well. That's a half-mile swim. So if you're an intermediate-level swimmer, you're welcome to join the group. Go to riverhuggerswim.org. We did add a swim ladder there. And, you know, it's really fun about river culture to me is that each one of these docks winds up taking on its own personality. So the Firehouse Dock tends to be a bit of a younger dock, I find. Then continuing North, we have the Duckworth Dock. That used to be a motorized dock. Oregon State Marine Board gave $300,000 30 years ago to help build the dock. It came with an encumbrance that said it could only be used by motorized boats, no fishing or swimming. It took us 6 years of work to get permission to add 8 swim ladders that took less than 4 hours to install. And now it is a non-motorized dock that only allows for pickup and drop off of motorized boating. It is my favorite place to swim. It's the closest to my house. Then after that, what's really interesting, and I work with the Linton folks a lot, there is no access to the Willamette River from Tomahcaw Bowl on the west side all the way past Linton. Consider that. There is no public access from Tomahcaw Bowl in downtown all the way past Linton on the west side of the river.
Is it all that petrochemical construction stuff?
Well, that's the critical energy infrastructure is a part of it, but it's also, you know, a lot of tea this, tea that, that's owned by the Port of Portland. It's nuts. I mean,
interesting. It's when you look at it that way, like when public gets access to a place, it winds up getting cleaned up. That's an interesting thought. Because of something you did.
Well, there's nothing original about people swimming in rivers.
Right.
I mean, so then from there, you wind up going all the way up to Broughton Beach. No, I'm not Broughton Beach. It's, I forget what the name of the beach is. It's on Swan Island. There's this really cool little esplanade on Swan Island that is like, it's like a mile that goes nowhere on either direction, but it's this really well-developed path with landscaping and lighting. It's a really good dog beach because you're just looking. I don't feel a lot of inspiration from swimming there just because you're looking right across that industry, but it's a really nice sandy beach. And I'd say I would say that would be a really great place to designate as a dog park if Portland Parks was ever thinking about a dog specific beach. But it is a really nice sandy beach that's on Swan Island, right behind Daimler headquarters. And then, the next stop would be Cathedral Park, which we've been talking about. If you haven't been to Cathedral Park in the last 3 years, you're going to be blown away at how different it looks. And that's really the principal inspiration about having this party, is just giving people an excuse to come rediscover it, particularly St. John's. But the funny thing, as I've been going through this, it makes me realize I actually do like throwing parties.
No, I mean, yeah, it's a movement disguised as a party.
Yeah. I mean, like, the big float got a little out of hand. Like, that actually was a tremendous amount of stress. It's just, but now that I've been planning this thing and getting together, I haven't done it a couple of years. Like, I've had this realization, you know, I do actually like throwing a party. So, but it is. It's a movement disguised as a party, and it's a way to celebrate the river. So I am really excited for Saturday. And then after that, you have Kelly Point Park. And that is an area that Parks and Rec really does not want people to swim because, probably about 10 years ago that there was drownings. The most dangerous part is on the Columbia side. It's just the confluence of two rivers, so the currents are really challenging. So, you know, I would never, out of respect for Portland Parks and Rec, I would never advocate for people swimming there. But, you know, if somebody did, I would do it on the Willamette side. And I talk to people who say that they've grown up in Portland and that's the place they've swam for 30 years. So, you know, my recommendation to Parks and Rec for that site has always been, you know, do a swim study, decide, figure out where the safer place to swim is there, and then socially engineer it so people do swim there. Find that safe swim spot, put up signs that list, you know, 4 people died at this particular spot, so people are less inclined to go there, and then make a place amenity rich, like put up a snack shack, put up a floating dock so people can swim to it and jump off of it, just like a skate park, you know, so people are tearing up the city and people don't like it, and then finally the city says, okay, forget it. We're going to create a place that you can have fun and it's going to be here and we're going to engineer it for you so you want to do it. That's what I'd like to see happen at Kelly Point Park.
It's so interesting because I'm a policy nerd, I'm just a nerdly person. I read studies and audits like they're fun. And you strike me as someone who, we may have some of the same goals, but you circle around them and you take a completely different approach. And it just fascinates me. Like, because I've been reading this book by a guy named Atul Gawande, and the book is called Being Mortal. And it's basically about, it's about growing old. It's about how we medicalize aging and how we take elderly people and stick them in a facility and do all these things to keep them from falling out of the bed and all these different things, because that's how we guarantee their quality of life. It's the same thing with these policy issues. Like, no, we can't swim because somebody could get hurt. So and your attitude is like, actually, that's life.
Well, here's the thing. It's really hilarious. But I was randomly in San Francisco, and this was when the weed legalization thing started happening. And one thing on the weed, a couple things on this. So number one, what I loved about the weed legalization thing, outside the fact that I do like indulging myself from time to time, is that there was one day that weed was not legal. And then the next day, you could grow it in your backyard. Like, rules do change. These are just social constructs, a lot of these rules. And a lot of times with the work that Human Access Project has done is innovation happens when rules change. Innovation happens when you do break the rules. You know, you know, what's really fun is I'm involved now with this group, this international group we call ourselves the River Nerds and the Water Nerds. 13 countries are represented. We all have the same stories about having to push people past their comfortability when it comes to reclaiming urban swimming areas. It's such a fun group, but all these stories are totally the same. So I was in San Francisco, and they're debating making weed legal. And what this guy's argument was is like, look, people have been finding ways to alter themselves through the end of time. We've done research, and we've found that there's tribes in the middle of nowhere that have managed to figure out how to intoxicate themselves in some way. You are not going to stop people from getting intoxicated. The best you can hope to do is make it safer and regulate it so that when it happens, there's more control over it. And I thought, you know what? The same is similar with swimming. All living creatures are drawn to river and water. You will not stop a human being from swimming in a river, particularly when Bureau of Environmental Services has been beating their chest rightfully that the Willamette is now safe for swimming. So I'm never going to say swimming is completely safe, just like riding a bike isn't completely safe, or being a pedestrian is completely safe, or being in a car is completely safe. But what you do is you recognize these activities are dangerous and you engineer them to be safer. So you come up with sidewalks and protected bike lanes, and you come up with speed limits, and you have sidewalks, or you have seatbelts and speed limits. In the same way with Parks and Rec, they made the correct decision that it starts with directing people to the least risky places to get into the river. And then from there, we can engineer these spaces to be safer. So now there's 6 places on the Parks and Recreation website where they recommend that people can swim that are safer. I always say safer because it's not an absolute thing. There's no such thing as safe swimming.
If you just tuned in, you are listening to Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest is Willie Levinson of the Human Access Project. And they have this Saturday a grand opening party for Portland's newest swimming dock at Cathedral Park. And there's going to be a beach. There's going to be all kinds of stuff. And you had asked me a few minutes ago, earlier in this hour, to look up the Portland Bridge Swim because it was so cool and you wanted to talk about it.
The Portland Challenge.
I can't find the challenge, but I'm finding the Portland Bridge Swim. But yeah. I am going to say this, though, as I'm starting to look, because if you're listening right now, Lisa Loving is an information hoarder. Lisa Loving is always looking up something. It doesn't even matter what it is. But I saw where in London people are doing Swim London Challenge. I've been reading about this before. The River Thames is considered to be very polluted, but people are jumping in and swimming along links of it because they want the government to spend money cleaning it up, which is pretty cool. So, Willie, I mean, where else are people doing these things?
Yeah, London. You know, Chris Romer is with Thames Bath. He's a part of our group. It's happening. Gosh, we had my poor brain. France is represented in the group. Belgium's represented in the group.
Wow, and it's just like it's people like you, really.
There, it is my people.
People who like to party in water.
People who see the power of water in urban areas and see that There's just a great opportunity to develop community spaces and just the joy that we have. We're, you know, I am a river evangelist, urban river evangelist as much as anything else, for sure. It's really been cool to connect with the international river nerds. And of course, you know, Paris is lifting all ships. I had the Friends of Chicago River invited me to speak at an annual river summit that they have 8 years ago. They were talking about making the Chicago River swimmable. And, you know, what's interesting is I was there and they dyed the river green, and, you know, people have a very similar relationship that in Chicago that Portland probably had with the Willamette when we started our work. So it was interesting then to share the stories of the things that we were doing. Now, one of the friends I met there is doing a Chicago River swim this year, and I'm going to be participating.
What is the river called? Is it the Chicago River? I'm going to be so ignorant right now.
Yeah, it's the Chicago River. So I'm going to be doing a mile swim. So I have a new fitness challenge with the River Huggers. I'm going to have to be able to swim a mile by September. But it's super cool. I mean, I was able to help Doug a little bit as organizer. He's just like, man, how do you get permits from the Coast Guard? And I was just like, well, do they close the river for other things? Well, then they should be able to close the river for you too, you know. But it's just, again, the bureaucracy doesn't want this change to happen, and you just have to really be dogged and fight.
You know,
same story everywhere.
I'm looking at you, and I remember when we were there at the one big float where we set that record, and I remember these dudes, and they were all the river guards. They were all the law enforcement on the river.
Yep.
What's that called? The Coast Guard.
Coast Guard, yeah.
And they were all sitting in this boat, and I just watched these guys. There was like 15 of them, and you could see at first they were like, wow, this looks dangerous. And then they started laughing, and then you could see that they wanted to jump in too.
Yeah.
And it goes back to that thing though, Will Levinson, I do not meet that many organizers, political organizers, who just jump into what I will call the opposition party, just jump into a place where they don't have any connections already, and they just start swimming around and people start swimming around too. That to create alliances with people and organizations that have not been connected with the river before is remarkable. And also, I'm remembering when I, the first time, now I've been to a couple of big floats, and you'll see these, you know, working class dudes with working class boats, and they definitely don't look like someone who'd be signing somebody's environmental petition, but they're out here with the river that is ours. I mean, if it is owned by someone, it is owned by all of us,
mm-hmm.
which fascinates me. So now, like, I just have to ask you, what is the most exciting thing that could possibly happen with the Willamette River in the next decade?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's going to be an intangible thing as much as anything else. It's going to be this sense that people love the Willamette, that it's a part of our city that we feel pride about, and that we can't wait for the summer to roll around because it's the place we all get together and congregate and swim. I mean, it's really, the work is cultural change, and 90% of my work is getting adults to cooperate with each other. But, you know, I mean, I'm committed to being civil, transparent, honest, and fun with my activism. And I think over 14 years, what's great is I feel supported. I mean, people are just like, what's the hardest thing in getting your work done? And it is a grind, but it's just so great to just look around and having people see value in the work that we're doing now. And, you know, I take particular pride that we've just, you know, I've tried, you know, one of my board members at one point, he was a 30-year veteran of the EPA, said that the hardest thing to learn in activism is restraint. You know, because you do want to, you know, time to time you get really frustrated. And what I'd say for any activist, anybody who brings excellence to the work that they do, everybody should have a chance to just lose their shit, you know, lose their mind every now and then, temporarily, because it can drive you nuts if you're really committed and bring excellence to what you do. But generally, it's one of the hardest things to do is to learn restraint. I remember I talked to somebody one time, and they were just like, yeah, I'd never be able to do that. Just, you know, working with the government would just drive me nuts. And I was just thinking, yeah, I guess, I mean, you know, my superpower is probably patience. if anything.
But see, I see you work with government agencies like the Parks Bureau and even city commissioners, but also sometimes I feel like as an environmentalist, I'm pointing at you and saying you are an environmentalist. As an environmentalist, I have felt like you, other people who had parts of the environmental movement, especially the river movement, literally, I feel like I've seen people who could not understand the point you were making. And the points that you've always been making is make it fun for people to jump in the river, make it so that people understand it belongs to them and the other stuff will fall into
place. That's right. That's correct. So, Duckworth Summer Wednesdays. How are we doing on time?
We have 10 minutes, so let's Duckworth.
Perfect. So, mentioned Duckworth Dock. It is between the Steel Bridge and Burnside Bridges on a floating section of the Esplanade. It has this great U shape, so there's protected swimming in the inside of the dock. Every Wednesday, this is going to be the second year we've officially done this, we do Duckworth Summer Wednesdays with Lloyd Eco District and our friends at Bike Loud, where we have DJ Carlos from Pop Cart PDX come down and have live DJ music on the dock. We have diving competitions, and we're going to be having some special guests of some synchronized swimmers this year for entertainment. And this unbelievable phenomenon, phenomenon happens where when the sun goes down, it bounces off Big Pink. So there's literally two sunsets that go down on the river.
It's sort of our Stonehenge moment.
It's kind of
our urban area.
It is absolutely Portland Stonehenge. So, you know, you just sit on the dock and you listen to the music and you hang out and you jump in when you get hot and you check out the sunset. It's just this super cool scene. So Bike Portland has Bike Happy Hour. Jonathan Moss, again, just incredible activist, and he's created this incredible community around biking, and Bike Loud and Bike Portland collaborate a lot. So people meet at Bike Happy Hour and then they bike down to the Duckworth Dock. So every Duckworth Wednesday, there's suddenly 100 bikers that show up. And when we installed the bike ladders, we also pulled permits and fundraised to put up 10 bike racks. But there's plenty of bike parking down there. So come down, definitely come down to Duckworth Summer Wednesday. It's super fun. We have it lifeguarded by AMR River Rescue. We have mobile food carts come down that sell sandwiches and ice cream. And it's just a blast. That to me is just a really highlight of Portland's swimming culture. That in Selwood, and I can't wait to see what happens in Cathedral Park and St. John's. Like this summer, that is going to turn into a river recreation playground.
So for people, now I'm gonna put my foot on the gas a little bit. So for people who want to volunteer with Human Access, what will they do? What do you need?
Well, you know, we need people getting in the river and having fun. I mean, like literally, if you want to help out Human Access Project and you've already swum in the Willamette River, you haven't, grab a friend and go to one of our suggested swimming areas and just go and swim and then go and tell your friends about what your experience was. Because the biggest battle in the cultural transformation that we want to have in our city is that word of mouth is extremely powerful. So if a friend moves to Portland, or if a friend talked about swimming in the Willamette and another friend said, oh, you never do that because it's toxic and it will, you know, your skin will flake off and you'll grow horns.
I mean, every body of water in the entire state of Oregon has some kind of toxic chemicals in it, except for maybe my bathtub.
You know, I don't want to downplay the fact that there, you know, the sediment in the Portland Harbor is bad. The principal risk to humans on the Willamette is resident fish consumption, because that enters your body. Resident fish eat the sediment. It builds up in their fatty tissue as a bioaccumulate, and then it makes its way up the food chain, whether it's a bird or a human. Salmon are fine, but there's lots of resources. You know, on a certain level, people should be curious. I would just encourage people to do their own research. But I do think it's funny too how, you know, number one, there's, you know, people who, it's fun. Once these articles start coming out, all the trolls start, you know, coming up with their best Willamette joke. And it's just unbelievable the hate that's put towards the river. But I would argue that it's more unhealthy to eat a Big Mac every day than to swim in the Willamette River. You know, Portland has horrible diesel pollution. I mean, it's not good. But, you know, the level of, you would think that we might walk around with gas masks on because we are ingesting that in our breathing. So, you know, it's sad. We live in an environment that's full of toxic chemicals. They're everywhere. It's in
but
the water,
also,
it's in the air.
We're going to reclaim, we're reclaiming it. We're reclaiming that water.
The more people see value in it, the more people will fight for it, and we can just keep making it better and better, and we can make sure that something like Windermuth doesn't happen again. We can take this energy from people who see the Willamette as an asset and direct their energy towards the critical energy infrastructure, which is a totally, you know, messed up thing that just really pisses me off whenever I think about it. And there's a great movement of people that are making great strides on that. So, you know, overall, there's lots of hope around the Willamette. And what I'd say is, it doesn't matter what cause you're working on. If you lose the hope of the public, the battle's over. And I think for people who make jokes about the Willamette River, it is an expression of hopelessness. It's a way to take something that's really uncomfortable and subordinate it by making fun of it. But, you know, lots of improvement is happening.
I have to say too, and we're running out of show, but when I have ever, all the times that I've been on a boat or even been in the water on the Willamette, the light's different. The city looks different. It all looks different. And I have to come out and say, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. And that's it for our show. Our guest today, Willie Levinson of the Human Access Project. Cathedral Park Festival coming up on Saturday. Thanks again for being on the air.
Thanks for having me, Lisa.
Connect with them online at humanaccessproject.com.
And Instagram and Facebook.
Excellent. Special thanks to KBOO Public Affairs Director Ender Black and Program Director Asia Hawthorne for making this all possible. KBOO Community Radio is open and the airwaves are waiting for you. Get involved by emailing volunteer@kboo.org. You can make a contribution to support programming like this at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number, 44321. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Hi, this is Mark Sanford Gross, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to KBOO, KBOO, 90.7 FM, Portland.
I'm Grace Gerling, Medicine Eagle Reed. I am broadcasting, negotiating dramatic.